Hello and welcome to this podcast, brought to you by K2 Animal Health Publishing and sponsored by Mariel Canada Inc., a forward-looking leading animal health company with a proven track record in producing pharmaceutical products and vaccines for livestock, pets, and wildlife. Today we'll be talking to Drs. Michael Dryden and Jason Coe about recent research with next-generation flea products, such as NexGard, that have shown to be highly effective at rapidly eliminating fleas on dogs and in infested homes. Dr. Michael Dryden is a University Distinguished Professor of Veterinary Parasitology in the Department of Diagnostic Medicine and Pathobiology at Kansas State University. His current research efforts are directed towards flea and tick biology and control, investigating urban wildlife as vectors of parasitic diseases, and diagnosis and control of gastrointestinal parasites. Dr. Jason Coe is an Associate Professor of Veterinary Medicine at the Ontario Veterinary College in Guelph, Ontario. With a PhD in veterinary communications, Jason joined the OVC's Department of Population Medicine, where he has established an active research program examining the human-animal bond, as well as the role of interpersonal communications on the outcomes of veterinary care. He coordinates a clinical communication curriculum and is involved in teaching students about the relationships that exist between people and animals. Welcome to you both, and thank you for participating in this podcast. We'll now hand over the reins to Dr. Coe.
So welcome, everyone. I know I speak for Dr. Dryden and myself when I say we're both excited to be here to share some new valuable information with the veterinary profession about flea control. Now, Mike, great to have the opportunity to work with you again. We're here today to discuss a study you've conducted looking at the efficacy of a new generation flea agent called afoxolaner and its role in eradicating fleas on infested dogs and in infested homes, and how its residual speed of kill has made it a popular option among veterinary dermatologists in flea control. To start us off, why don't you tell us a little more about afoxolaner?
Well, afoxolaner is a member of a new class of compounds called isoxazolines. They are basically what they call GABA-gated chloride agonists. The idea here is, quite frankly, this is one of the first groups of compounds that we've seen that can be administered orally, in this case to dogs, and gets not only fleas, but also is highly effective against a variety of other external parasites, including ticks. I think what has surprised the veterinary community is just how effective these compounds are. And really what we're looking at here is some remarkable residual speed of kill. That is their ability to kill these organisms, not just on day one, but several weeks down the road, still have remarkable efficacy and still great safety.
So Mike, I understand that decreasing prolonged flea feeding and reducing the amount of salivary protein delivered to an allergic pet, given that controlling fleas and combating flea allergy dermatitis is so important. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, that's a great question, Jason. I think historically, the profession had an idea that we had to stop these fleas from biting on these dogs or cats, for that matter, to stop flea allergy dermatitis clinical signs. But what we have found is a lot of the compounds we've had available to us, even these topicals, even some that are considered even repellents, such as those that contain permethrin, really struggle mightily to stop fleas from actually biting. When these fleas jump on these dogs, they feed almost immediately, with many of them being blood-fed. In fact, most of them being blood-fed within 5 minutes or less. So it's really difficult with any kind of topical that we've ever had to really stop fleas from biting and feeding, and we've recognized that for quite a while now. But saying that, we've also recognized that those topicals historically have done a good job of managing flea allergy dermatitis. So we ultimately came to understand that flea allergy dermatitis is not anaphylaxis. It's not a single flea bite that's producing the problem. The problem is that letting these fleas feed for prolonged periods of time, injecting salivary protein while they're doing that, and then ultimately putting this animal over its individual predict threshold, and therefore eliciting the pruritus and then the clinical signs associated with flea allergy dermatitis. So what we found here is these new isoxazolines, in this case today we're talking about afoxolaner, their ability to kill these fleas rapidly once these fleas jump on these dogs is really very profound. And what we're seeing, and this has now been published in clinical trials, is that the use of these oral isoxazolines can effectively manage flea allergy dermatitis and flea infestations because we're killing these fleas so rapidly. So the era of thinking that we can't manage fleas and flea allergy dermatitis with an oral are clearly gone, because the data is very conclusive now. In fact, there's really no longer any question about this, that we can effectively manage fleas and foliata dermatitis with these oral rapidly killing isoxazolines.
So, Mike, for our listeners, you've mentioned historically products have been relatively effective at breaking the flea cycle. So, specifically, what is the advantage of these new generation options?
Well, that's a great question. So, what we're looking at here is we administer these compounds, in this case, to dog, this a fox alarner, and we get really highly effective residual blood levels. So, when fleas emerging out of the environment or jumping on them, they're killed very, very rapidly. The big deal here is to kill them rapidly enough, not only to manage your salivary protein injection, but also to kill them rapidly enough that these fleas never achieve reproductive status. And that's the key. Can we kill these fleas, not only today, but in this case, a month down the road, kill them once they jump on, kill them within 24 hours so that no female flea can ever lay an egg. And if we do this, we can effectively manage flea in populations, because the idea is simply, if you cannot reproduce as a species, you're going to go extinct. So we're basically driving these fleas to extinction in these local environments by preventing them from ever laying an egg.
So it seems like a great asset for the veterinary profession and people and their pets in the fight against fleas. I understand you've done some research on a fox alarner. Tell us a little around that.
Well, yes. A couple of years ago, we actually conducted a field study in Tampa, Florida. In dogs in private residences. We always go down to Tampa in the summers to actually do our evaluations of flea products. Of course, we go to Tampa because it's kind of considered the flea capital of the world. We kind of joke about that, but it's probably true. It's not uncommon to find dogs down there with well in excess of 500, maybe even 1,000 fleas on them. And so when we go down there to evaluate these products, we really have, if you will, an acid test of their performance. And quite frankly, when we took a fox alarner down there a couple of years ago, we had remarkable success in every home, on every dog, in the ability of these compounds to completely eliminate flea infestations in these homes.
So, having done some of my own work in compliance and adherence in veterinary medicine, I'm curious, how did you control for compliance in your study?
Jason, one of the issues we face in Tampa, like a lot of places, is how do we control compliance? Well, the way we've dealt with compliance is we've taken compliance out of the hands of the pet owner. Because in all of our field studies that we conduct down in Tampa, we are actually administering the products ourselves. And that, I think that's the key. We're weighing the animals appropriately. We're administering the compounds ourselves. So we know they're getting administered correctly. Because in these field studies, we want to make sure that when we're evaluating these products, we're truly evaluating the performance of the product. We're not evaluating the compliance of the pet owner.
That's great, and your work's fascinating. So I know when we've presented together before, you've often talked about the flea biomass. Tell our listeners and myself a little bit more about that.
Well, really, that's probably the key question you're going to ask today in this interview, is a recognition that when that pet owner arrives into that veterinary practice, there's already fleas back in that home, and we understand this. But not only fleas on this dog, but those fleas have been laying eggs. And so in that environment, there are eggs, there are larvae, there are pupae, and there are emerging adult fleas, a biomass that's already there. In fact, it's been looked at, and it's believed that by the time the pet owner arrives in the veterinary practice, there has been fleas developing in this home for at least 4, if not 6 to 8 weeks, over the last, again, a month and a half to 2 months. The pet owners never see the first one or two fleas a dog and cat acquires. That dog has gone outside and picked up maybe a male flea today, a female flea tomorrow. They have basically fed, they have mated, she's laid eggs, and the client is obviously blissfully unaware this is going on. And then those eggs develop into larvae, develop into pupae, and then you ultimately have emerging adult fleas. And at some point, there are now enough fleas on this animal that they come to the veterinarian, and they want this problem eliminated immediately. Well, it can't be over yesterday, can't be over tomorrow. The fact of the matter is, it's going to take us some time to eradicate this biomass. And to think about this for a moment, Jason, if that appointment was 10 o'clock this morning in that practice, and the client left their home at 9:30 to get to their practice at 10 o'clock, before that animal left that home, those fleas were laying eggs. And those eggs were laid basically at 9:29 this morning, have got to develop from eggs to larvae to pupae and emerging adult fleas, and those fleas aren't going to be emerging for 1 or 2 months down the road. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about this biomass, and it's really important to understand that that's a problem we deal with in these flea infestations.
That's such an important point. And so I'm curious, in terms of addressing the biomass, how do you assess that in the research you've done?
Well, the only really way to address the biomass is what's in that environment is to look at emerging fleas that are coming out of the cocoon. So a number of years ago, in fact, going back to 1993, I worked with a group of entomologists here at Kansas State University, and we invented what was called the intermittent light trap. And it was patented back in 1993. The patent is now long since expired. But the point of this is that this trap is collecting primarily newly emerged fleas, or at least fleas that have not established themselves as permanent ectoparasites on these dogs or cats in these households. So the idea is we have fleas in these traps, in these homes. That means that a flea has probably emerged from that cocoon within the previous 24 hours. And either we've collected directly, or it maybe jumped on the animal, jumped off, and then we collected it. Because what we're finding in these traps is we're collecting recently emerged fleas, and we're not really collecting, if you will, replete or reproducing fleas in these traps. That's a really fair phenomenon. So what we're really collecting, again, is the newly emerging fleas. So when we put these traps in these homes, we put two traps in the homes, and we evaluate the fleas in these traps once a week throughout the study, and we only leave the traps in there overnight so they're not in there continuously. And as long as we're collecting fleas in the traps, it means fleas are developing, emerging out of the biomass. Once we're no longer collecting fleas in these traps in these homes, it means the product has done its job. That is, sometime you previously stopped reproduction, and now we've exhausted the biomass. If you will, basically we've put a dam in the river, shut the floodgates, and let the river run dry, and now there's no longer any fleas emerging in these traps in these homes. And it's been the only way that's been found ever to effectively manage looking at the biomass in these homes.
Sounds great. Sounds like a lot of work. So I'm learning that the development of sex characteristics of a flea are different than other insects. Would you tell our listeners a little more about that?
Well, it's really interesting. You know, it's one of those things that I think initially you consider almost an academic exercise, but it's really not. What has been found with the cat flea, the most common flea in dogs and cats in North America, is they really have a developmental cycle where basically the females develop more rapidly than the males do. So basically what we're talking about here is if I put 100 flea eggs in a petri dish and I follow those along, the very first fleas that ultimately emerge out of that are going to be the females. Then you have some males and females, and ultimately just the males emerge out of that cohort of eggs. As I mentioned, this kind of sounds like just a purely academic exercise. Well, it's really not. Because what we have found is if you use a product that effectively manages reproduction, then what's going to happen is over time, that flea population should essentially age, if you will. It should become more male. So when we use a product effectively in these homes, what we find is that when you initially go in there, there's generally going to be about, you know, over a 50-50 female to male ratio. In fact, it's often around 60% females in a home. But if the product stops reproduction, essentially fixes the number of eggs that are there now, then over time, what happens is we shift from a more female to a more male-dominated population. So if you go back to when we did this work back in the 1990s, again, you know, it seems like, well, who really cares what develops first, females or males? Well, what we found is it actually makes a difference. In fact, we've learned that we can evaluate the effectiveness of a flea product by looking at the shift, if you will, in gender structure from predominantly a female to predominantly male population. So I can actually tell a pet owner, a veterinarian, or even a pharmaceutical company, often within 3 weeks, whether a product is performing in that house or not, because by 3 weeks, we should see a shift in the gender from predominantly female to predominantly male population.
So if I've got this right, when a female mature flea lays eggs, the first eggs to hatch will be the females. Following that, there'll be a mix of females and males, followed by exclusively towards the end out of that batch of eggs will be the males. And so we can assess the rapid kill, the rapid speed of kill by the gender shift. And so because we're killing those female, emerging female fleas quickly, what we should see if that's having a rapid kill is a predominance of male fleas at the end of that period.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The since we've treated the animal with the product, any fleas that jump on, we're killing very rapidly. They're not laying any eggs. We've essentially fixed the number of basically eggs and larvae and pupae in that environment. So over time, the only thing that's going to be left is we're going to shift again from the female to a male emergent population. It's exactly right. So Jason, what we saw in this study with Fox Alaner is that while initially we were predominantly a female population within these homes, and it was, okay? In fact, in day zero, again, the vast majority of the fleas in these traps were female. And in fact, at day seven, there were still 61% of the fleas in these traps were female. However, by the time we got down to day 28, 78% of the fleas in these traps were male. So we had shifted that gender from predominantly a female to predominantly male population. And then within a couple more weeks, there were no more fleas in these homes at all. We'd completely eradicated that biomass.
That's great. So recognizing that many flea control products contain tick control as well, I can imagine there are listeners there wondering, what about ticks?
Well, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, when these products first came out, these new isoxazolines, people were really concerned about, can we manage ticks effectively with an oral product where the ticks actually have to crawl on and initiate feeding? Well, what we found is, yes, they can. In fact, I'll be honest, I was one of those people who was a little bit concerned when these compounds first came out. I no longer have any concern at all. We have seen remarkable efficacy, both in the field. My clinical impression is one thing, but also now there are a number of published studies with these isoxazolines, well in excess of 20 published studies with this whole class of chemistry now, demonstrating conclusively that this class of compounds, including the Fox Alaner, are incredibly effective at managing ticks.
So Mike, as you know, I'm always interested in the veterinary perspective. I'm also interested in the pet owner perspective. And so I can imagine we have listeners that are out there who are thinking, okay, pet owners are going to be asking me about the safety of a Fox Alaner. What can you speak to that?
Well, you know, I'm not a toxicologist, but I am a veterinarian and a former veterinarian. So far, we have found Fox Alaner to be a remarkably safe compound. It's really kind of hard to, describe this, but you know, quite frankly, I've not seen an adverse event yet in the work that I've done. Clearly, things can happen out there in the field, but compared to any of the classic chemistry we've had prior to this, a Fox Alaner is as safe as any type of a flea or tick product that we've ever had.
Mike, this has been a fascinating discussion, and I know I'm taking a lot away from it, and I expect our listeners will as well. I've learned a lot about how the latest generation of flea and tick products work. It is especially interesting to learn about how studies are done to look at these new flea products, particularly the information about the gender shift and the importance of residual speed of kill when determining the efficacy of flea and tick products. Thanks for sharing this information with myself and our listeners today.
Thank you to Drs. Dryden and Co. for sharing your time with us today. It was a really interesting and informative discussion. Thank you also to Mariel Canada Inc. for sponsoring this podcast.